Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Brandon, we have our mystery partners announced, Kota Ibushi with the Elite and Pac. We got to say both ways, for Blackpool Combat Club with a beatdown of Kenny, and then not the best timing of the Bucks and Hangman running in. It took him a while. Kenny took quite a beating before they got there, but, you know, who knows what they were up to. And then Kenny cutting a show-closing promo, vowing to get at Don Callis when he beats everybody else up. Not a lot of talk about Ibushi other than Excalibur trying to fill people in who weren't popping and going crazy at home like Eric Kroll and others. What'd you think of the show closing angle? It's not that often that Dynamite ends without a so-called main event match and with a promo and in a big angle and a big reveal for next week's show. They're certainly looking to pop a big rating next week with the Blood and Guts match, which obviously, you know, stands out from most big matches on Dynamite.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting direction for the show. I thought it was a nice break from format. It's more along the lines of what you see WWE do on Friday nights in particular, when they sort of build the show around a bloodline show closing angle. And I thought they made it pretty clear from the get-go tonight that they were going to headline or close with this segment, and I thought that was a pretty good indicator that we were going to get in-person reveals for at least one of the two mystery partners, and that there would be some sort of big show-closing brawl to really set up next week. Given that, you know, this is very much particular to me, but given that I will be in attendance for Blood and Guts next week, I liked the extra attention paid to the show because it very much feels like a special edition of Dynamite next week. So that was a positive. I thought that the reveals were strong overall. I mean, I think a lot of people expected Kota Ibushi to be the partner for the Elite. It made a lot of sense. Kenny's references, you know, following Double or Nothing certainly pointed to the idea that he may be looking for a friend and cohort from another country. And they made it clear, slyly at least, in little promos on Dynamite, that he hadn't gone back to Canada to look for that partner. So I thought that they did a good job teasing that Ibushi would be the guy, and I think that was the right move. On the other side of things, for Blackpool Combat Club, I really, really like the idea of putting Pac in that role. I think that for a match that obviously was supposed to and would have featured Bryan Danielson, had he not broken his arm at Forbidden Door, I think Pac just slides into that role very nicely. So nicely, in fact, that I wouldn't mind him being a member of Blackpool Combat Club going forward. He just fits their whole style, their motive, the way that they function. I really like it. I'm not typically one for throwing a bunch of guys on a team to make it work, and I realize their hand was forced a little bit here, but I can't think of someone who fits that bill better than Pac.
Yeah, I think these are two really good reveals. Pac was in the realm of speculation, you know, a name that was out there that might fit, and there's, you know, an intensity and a sense of ruthlessness to him that fits being dropped into this circumstance. And I thought him leaning down and making it personal with Kenny Omega, getting in his face and talking to him, but also having Kenny then follow up and go, look at the big screen, we got a fifth man too, might not be what I would say. Well, I don't know. I guess if I was about to have my neck crushed by a chair, maybe I would try to distract people by saying, hey, look over there, there's some news. But the sequence of Pac getting in Kenny's face, it made it seem like, all right, Pac's not just a hired hand. He's got a stake in this too. So that worked. Yeah, I mean, I think they did. I think they did a nice job building up Blood and Guts. The only The only thing is most of the show wasn't about next week. And I'm, you know, mixed feeling. I'm hesitate to criticize that, but there was so much to plug. You know, I mean, it's yeah. Rampage and Collision and Battle of the Belts. And we've got this tag tournament. We've got the women's tournament. We've got the men's Owen Hart tournament. And then like trying to keep track of dates and when, like it was kind of confusing. When does the winner of the tournament or when are the finals of the tournament? And it sounded like they were saying it was July 29th on Collision. And then they kind of cleared that up later and said, no, the finals are going to happen next week on Dynamite. Is that right?
That is correct. The finals of the tournament will happen next week on Dynamite, and the tag team title match featuring the winner of the tournament and the winner of FTR and Bullet Club Gold will face off on July 29th. And that's where the confusion was coming in, because MJF and Adam Cole were both saying July 29th, but they were speaking as though they are going to win the tournament, and that's when they will win the tag titles.
And so with all of that to plug, even if it had been clear, you know, like what was happening, right. We had three sets of brackets showing all these dates, a Battle of the Belt special. That took a little away from making next week feel like this, you know, this major happening, can't believe it's on basic cable type match. And so I guess personally, if I'm to critique anything about building up the match, yes, they closed with a big angle and I think it worked. And the video for Ibushi was fine. I think they did a good job, you know, kind of showing off images of him that make him feel like a charismatic, athletic big deal. For people who aren't familiar with him, they probably look at that and go, okay, this guy seems like a big deal. People are reacting to him a certain way. And then there's people who know who he is, and they're super stoked about this. So that worked. I would have probably stamped a few segments with, you know, notes about what Blood and Guts is, how it works, and pushed a little bit harder the notion that that's a big deal next week. They had so many masters to serve in that regard. That's my only, you know, qualm in terms of the formatting of the show is it seemed like, oh, that's right, Battle of the Belts, Blood and Guts is next week. And I just would have hammered that home throughout the show a little bit more. But again, that's a relatively small critique, because I think, again, they had a lot to get across, and I think they ultimately did. But boy, there's a lot to think about between now and next Wednesday that they throw at us.
Yeah, there certainly is. They've got the tournament finals. They've got both tournament finals. I mean, we still have a semifinal match on the women's side of the tournament, and then we have the finals for both men and women on Saturday's Collision. And then before we get to the actual Blood and Guts match, the finals of the Blind Eliminator Tag Tournament are going to happen next week as well. So yeah, there's a lot going on. My one critique of that main event segment was just the continued over-reliance on Lights Out. I mean, I get that they needed to get the Bucks and Hangman to the ring somehow, but like, you're cutting to a video screen. Is it that big of a deal if the audience sees the Bucks and Hangman run in? The audience at home isn't going to see it because right. they're watching the Kota Ibushi promo.
I've been complaining about the Lights Out gimmick since they did it on the first show they ran. Like, I'm like, come on, let's move on.
They do it like once a month.
I know. Yes. And they've done it more than once a month at times, but on average, I think I might take the over on that. I might take the average like 1.3 times a month over the course of their history. So I was glad Kenny talked. Like, I want to hear Kenny talk more. I feel like he hasn't forged a bond verbally with a lot of people who were not watching Tokyo Dome shows, you know, 5 years ago. Like, I mean, there's still a relationship to be built with him and some of the more casual fans who have peeled off the product a little bit. And so anytime he gets a microphone, I don't think he's bad on the microphone. I don't think he's like super confident, and maybe he, you know, they don't produce him or give him talking points, or he's not, I don't know why he doesn't talk more, but he's not bad. And, you know, when he's passionate, you know, I think he makes you want to see him fight. I like that. At first I was like, why isn't he selling the beatdown? And then he started coughing after he got, you know, a couple sentences out. So I was like, okay, good. We're not just doing the pretend the beatdown didn't happen, I'm totally fine thing either. So that was good.
I like the old I like the old catchphrase too. I mean that works. It's something that the fans know. It made sense within the context of the show, and it also I just associate him doing the, you know, the bid you adieu and good night thing with a more serious Kenny Omega, and that's what I want to see.
Yes, I totally agree. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves and the show quickly, and then we'll move on to other segments from this show and bring some listener feedback into it. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, July 12th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show. I publish, edit, and founded the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. The latest issue is up with a cover story on the collision rating so far and some backstage observations on how Punk is handling things as the alpha veteran leader of essentially his own locker room at this point. So if you're a VIP member, check that out. We'll have that posted in probably the next 12 hours here on the VIP website in PDF and alt text format. If you're not a VIP member, you're missing out on a lot of stuff every day that's VIP exclusive and 35 years of archives of insider wrestling coverage in multiple formats. Check out details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. The other voice here on the show is Brandon LeClaire, and he is a PWTorch.com contributor. He was on the SmackDown beat for a while, and now he is covering pay-per-views with his reports alongside mine, doing a fantastic job with detailed match coverage and analysis that is must-read analysis throughout these shows. And, Brandon, it is also good when you're on shows like this, the post-show, so we can talk about a variety of topics. You are both in the rotation on WWE and AEW shows, but it's always fun when we can talk some AEW. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. And it just so happened to work out that we scheduled this a little earlier this week, and then you know this evening I happened to make my plans to go to AEW next week official. So it just kind of worked out.
How far are you from the venue?
So it takes me it's a 3-hour drive, but
okay.
when I do shows at the Garden, I take the train from Portland, Maine, which is only about a 70-minute drive from me, and then I just hop on the Amtrak and take the train literally right into the basement of TD Garden. So if I don't want to, I don't even have to see the outdoors in Boston. I can leave my train and go right upstairs into the venue.
Oh, thank God.
I won't do that because I'm getting there in the late afternoon. But if I wanted to, I could.
Well, maybe in January it'd be nice to avoid any of the elements, but Boston's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So can I invite you to be our on-site correspondent next week? Is that going to work? You're going to be on a train.
My train's at 11:25, so I think I should be able to catch most of Rampage. I should be able to.
Yeah, so if it works out, we'll aim for that. But if anyone else wants to also be an on-site correspondent, especially if Rampage runs long and Brandon has to hop on the train because of the timing of it, let me know. We are looking for on-site correspondents for all upcoming shows: Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Collision, and you can email WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com to let us know what show you're going to. Please include the city and the date in the subject line of your email, and that helps me stay organized, and I'll be in touch, and we'll line up having you on. It's always great getting perspective on people who are in the building. They see things we don't see on TV, and they relay that to all of us here, the hosts and the listeners. That email is also how you can participate in this show and all future post shows. You can email your thoughts, questions, comments, rants, rebuttals to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. You can also call us. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. By the way, nobody has pushed 1 yet. I see a bunch of people on hold. So if you do want to talk about the show, it's going to be a short wait, and we'll prioritize getting you on if you're interested in joining us that way. Meanwhile, I want to we'll get to some emails sooner if that's the case, but also I want to talk about some other things on this show. We've got the MJF Cole situation, Chris Jericho, and more. But I want to talk about Nick Wayne's debut here next, Brandon. Nick Wayne loses to Swerve Strickland, no shame in that, in his national live TV debut since turning 18 earlier this month. Swerve won in 11 minutes. Darby Allin cheering him from the stage. What did you think of the vignette of Nick Wayne at home talking about his dad dying and training to wrestle since he was nine, being in the ring for the first time? I think there's a photo of him at 6 months old, if I recall the exact age.
Yes.
And he's been seriously training since age nine, so half his life. I thought he came across as well-spoken, confident, not cocky, likable, and mature enough to handle this moment. And I thought it was a good performance in the ring, reminding me a bit of 1-2-3 Kid Sean Waltman when I first started seeing him on the indie scene here in the Minneapolis area back in the late 1980s. But one thing Nick has going for him that Sean Waltman, who is a great friend of mine, but he knows it's true. Sean was not a good talker early in his career. I was the first one to interview him live on radio on my old KFAN radio show and studio. And that is in our VIP archives, by the way. And it was a bit of a struggle. Sean was not a polished public speaker at that point. Nick Wayne, man, I thought he was impressive and hit the right notes on his promo. And also with what he did in the ring. What'd you think? What was good? And did anything go on the other side and didn't seem good?
Yeah, I thought it was impressive. I mean, he still got that look of a kid because really he is. I mean, it's very much in the way that Dominic Mysterio still to this day kind of looks a bit like a kid.
Yeah.
But obviously Nick has some time to fill in as far as his body goes, and he'll grow into his body a bit better as he gets a little bit older and continues to wrestle. But I thought the video package they put together for him was really good. It was very unlike AEW, and in a great way. And I mean that in the sense that it would not have surprised me if they had just thrown this kid on television with very little hyper promotion and tried to talk about his experience on the indies, have Excalibur, do it breathlessly in between moves. But they didn't. They gave him a significant amount of time in a really well put together video package that made Wayne a sympathetic figure and made it so you wanted to see him wrestle this match rather than me feeling like, well, here's just another guy that I'm not terribly familiar with eating up TV time. And I didn't end up feeling that way at all because they did a really good job in the lead up. And it, just so I don't forget, I thought that they did that on more than one occasion tonight. They had that little bit for Lance Archer as well, who's going to be returning on Rampage. I thought, saying, hey, Lance Archer's been away for a while. This is what he's been up to. And show him beating guys up in other promotions. That was great. And they should be doing that stuff more consistently with talent that takes time away. So, yeah, a big thumbs up in that regard. I thought that the Wayne segment went over really well. I thought the match was strong. Definitely thought that Swerve Strickland should have gotten the win, and I'm glad that he did. He's a guy that should certainly be on the come up. And I think that Nick Wayne, obviously has a long way to go before he is a viable competitor at the level that I believe Strickland should be in that company. So I thought they made the right call. And like Taz and Tony kind of said toward the end there, that wins and losses matter. And Swerve Strickland defeated Nick Wayne and deserved to defeat Nick Wayne. But Wayne earned a lot, even in defeat. And I think that was exactly right.
How do you like the Darby-Nick Wayne linking them up? It has real life connections, so it's logical to do. And where do you see Nick Wayne's push going? Like, what's the pace of how this should go? Where do you see him in a month, 6 months, a year, based on what you saw tonight, what we know about his background, the crowd reaction tonight, the maturity he's showing, but the fact that, like you said, he looks like a kid, he's 0-1. What's the right course for him, or what's a good course for him? Not that there's a single right way.
I'm not sure. I mean, he's someone who probably could have benefited from a format like AEW Dark. I mean, just getting some wins under his belt. Maybe you slowly bring him up the ranks on Rampage and you see how he connects with the audience. Not unlike the way that they treated Hook in the beginning. But I don't know if I don't know if they have the room for that now. I mean, it's hard when they've got a significant amount of TV time, but I don't know how much you're going to be able to dedicate to him in the early going. I think it's going to be important to see how well he connects with the audience going forward. I don't think that these smaller market Canadian crowds are necessarily very indicative of what we can expect. I thought that tonight the crowd had, you know, sizable reactions to the major things that you would have expected them to. But there was a lot of stuff that felt a little underwhelming, including, you know, what they gave Nick Wayne for a reaction. They did come up for his offense a bit, and I think they started to get into him as he went along. So as they become more familiar, I think the crowd reaction is probably going to need to dictate how heavily he's featured. I don't know. I mean, you certainly don't want him to fall into a position like Action Andretti did. And he was kind of introduced in a similar fashion in the sense that he was introduced as enhancement talent, but the similar look. I mean, the tights are not dissimilar. I mean, the general look is not all that far off, honestly. So you don't want to get him in a position like that. But I also am not sure how quickly you can move someone up that young. It's a conundrum that WWE had with Dominic too.
Yeah. No, I asked you because I don't have an answer. And I mean, you know, obviously very early. I can see Darby and Nick teaming against the heel team and Darby, you know, and maybe a six man with Sting where there's man. I mean, the age difference. If Sting teams with Darby and Nick Wayne, you got 18, and then what is Sting's current age? Sting wrestler age. Let's look this up. So he's 64. So so that'd be 54. I can't do the. I'm good at math. I can't do math right now.
He's
I'm gonna pull up the calculator
like 46. 46 years.
The difference is 46. Yeah, 46 year difference. That might be one of the higher age differences in wrestling history. I'd be curious trivia wise, what other situations there have been. And I don't mean like a novelty of some, you know, wrestler who's been retired for 30 years who, like, you know,
right
comes out of retirement, like a wrestler who never retired and is, you know, semi-active like Sting. That'd be crazy. And it could happen. Storyline wise, it works. So there's things that they can do to bring him along, but also, you know, kind of protect him and just, you know, I mean, like, for instance, Darby and Wayne, Nick Wayne against Matt Menard and Angela Parker. Just good starter feud, you know, just, and then they can win and you move on from there. Something along those lines. But yeah, ease them into it and kind of, like you said, see how the fans respond. Obviously try to steer them as best you can in certain ways. But, you know, I don't think they should be tempted to make it complicated or overthink it. You know, I think people are going to like seeing him wrestle and let fans watch him grow in front of them for 2, 3, 4 years before you go start thinking about, well, you know, do we turn him heel or do we give him a TNT title run? Like, just let fans see him grow up in front of their eyes as an 18-year-old right now.
Yeah, and I think I also hesitate about how the Darby pairing works too, because they're it's such a stark contrast, and I guess it could be good for Darby Allin in a way to give his character a little bit more dimension and make him not even necessarily more sympathetic, because I think the pairing with Sting has done a pretty decent job of that. But I guess the idea of Darby Allin taking someone under his wing the way that Sting has taken him, I think that could work positively for Darby.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like the youth too. I mean, I think part of what was exciting about AEW early on was Jungle Boy, Sammy Guevara, Darby, MJF. You know, wrestlers who are like, okay, I'm interested in seeing the beginning of their journey, and they look talented and they've got charisma. Others were, you know, in the mix, people, you know, Kip Sabian. I mean, there's been others who have been young. And then we've seen it with Action Andretti, Dante Martin, Darius Martin. There's been others who have come along. But Nick Wayne is another one of those. And I like that diversity on a roster, a body type, personality, gender, nationality, everything, just like a real mix. But having a young athletic wrestler with the family lineage and years of acclaim from, you know, pre-age 18 indie appearances, it's fun to have that in the mix. It was one of the points that I made with my Keller's take on pwtorch.com about Collision, that, you know, one thing Collision could use is just a little bit a dose of some youth, you know, that mm-hmm. that sense of we're watching some younger wrestlers at the beginning of their journey, and it's not just a, you know, a bunch of established stars or, you know, Punk and Joe in their mid-40s battling it out. So I think he can be of value for sure, even early on, but I wouldn't overthink it and overdo it, and they might be tempted to, but I hope they don't. Swerve Strickland, where do you see him right now? He gets a win tonight, but it's not like a statement win. He beat an 18-year-old rookie in his first national live TV match. People have been a little frustrated about Swerve not getting a more sustained singles push. Is Swerve someone that people should think about as a top four, top five heel on whatever show he's on? Because it feels like he's the next level below that and sometimes comes across as an afterthought. Is AEW not doing enough with Swerve?
I don't think they are. And I made this argument last time. I think I was on the AEW Dynamite post show. I see Swerve Strickland as one of the most exciting and interesting talents that they have on the roster. And when he came over to AEW, I really thought he was going to be something big for them, and I hope that he still can be. I think that the tag team with Keith Lee in the early going was really good for both of them, and I think since their split, the fact that they never seemed to get a real blow off to that feud has almost kind of left them both feeling like they're in some sort of limbo. And I know earlier this week, someone made a statement. I don't know if it was Lee or Swerve or somebody in Tony's ear. I don't recall. But someone said that Keith Lee versus Swerve Strickland is planned at some point. And it's like, I guess, what are you waiting for at this point? So I'd like to see a proper blow-off to all of that. They still cross paths with each other. They just did the tag again in the Blind Eliminator tournament. So clearly they're thinking about, you know, how the two of them interact with each other. I'm glad that Swerve is getting a more prominent role on television. He was one of those guys, like many others, who for a while had been more or less completely relegated to Rampage, which I don't think was good for him or for anyone, really, given what Rampage has been defined as and now what it has become in the wake of Collision being added to the schedule. I think that Swerve is also being held back by the constant need to put a faction around him, and it's always a loose faction. It never feels like it's a strong group of guys.
Yes.
More just like a bunch of people that they throw with Swerve for the sake of it. I mean, they had I forget his name already, Parker, and another guy who might have already been released or let go or was never signed, I'm not sure. But he dumped them pretty quickly and then went to the embassy, and now that's reformed as Mogul Affiliates. None of it is well defined. None of it is heavily featured enough to seem like it matters. I'd rather just let Swerve be Swerve.
I'm with you on that. I mean, is there such a thing as too many factions? Maybe, maybe not. But there is such a thing as too many factions because some of the factions don't matter, and they're not well defined. And there's just when you get thrown in a I mean, they just you're right. I mean, I don't need to add more to it. You're right. Swerve has never just sort of been this singular act that they seem to trust to just go out there and cut promos, get himself over, and be in the ring. And I don't think we should just think of Swerve as part of a faction. He can have cohorts, but be like primarily a top-level singles star, face or heel, whatever role they want him in. And it does seem like he has all those all the pieces to be someone they could elevate significantly more than what they've done with him. And I wonder if there's a reason they're not, you know, I don't even want to speculate. Just, you know, because sometimes people don't get pushed real hard because the promoter's like, you know, Jake Hager, he was on tonight. You know, as an example. Like, you know, Jake's going out for cigarette breaks, falling asleep at booking meetings, doesn't seem to be as committed as, well, for sure wasn't as committed to just talking the business and learning like the people who had influence when he first debuted had in their formative years. And so people are like, yeah. He's not going to be the guy. You know what I mean? Like, and that worked against him because people want to see someone who's hungry and dedicated and wanting to learn and all that. And the people who are like that get ahead, and the people who don't can be left behind. So, and that can come in all shapes and sizes. But with Swerve, you know, you look and you just see this otherwise seemingly kind of total package of somebody who could be a top four, top five heel at any given time on any TV show. And it just doesn't really happen. So I guess I can ask around on that. But, you know, sometimes I'm just told – like more generically than I wish, but I sometimes understand why. When I ask people, they're like, the people who aren't getting pushed who you think should be, there's a reason, you know, like that, like, and, yeah. But I don't, it better be a good reason. Cause damn, Swerve is someone I think could add to the cool factor and just be a fresh star, especially now as AEW is kind of splitting their roster of top tier guys and separating them on two separate shows somewhat. This is a good time to get behind him.
Yeah, he'd be a great. I mean, you talk about, you know, getting some youth on Collision. I mean, he'd be a great addition to that roster. I mean, even, you know, he's not the youngest guy, but I just mean, you know, obviously quite a bit younger than Punk and Joe and those guys. I think that he just strikes me as someone with so much natural charisma that he's hard to ignore or hold back from a prominent role. It just seems like I've always thought that he pops off the screen, both, you know, in AEW and when he was in WWE as well. It's part of the reason that I thought that at the time Hit Row was a really exciting faction for WWE. I mean, it obviously wasn't because of the others. It was Swerve. I mean, he obviously, we have seen since what Hit Row is without Swerve. So yeah, and as far, you know, I have no idea about you mentioned Jake Hager, and I know you're not comparing Swerve directly to him or anything, but I do want to mention too, like Swerve is a guy that I saw pretty regularly here at Indie Promotions when he would come through Maine. And one thing that I always noticed with him was no matter where he was on the card, if you looked around throughout the night, you could spot him. You could find him in the crowd, standing, watching the matches, every match.
Wow.
Matches before him, matches after him. He was always there. He never left early. He was always watching the other matches.
And that's like a sign that other, you know, veterans look for. Like, is this guy just looking at his phone and watching funny videos or playing video games? Or is he watching matches, studying things, asking questions of veterans, critiquing and giving advice to younger wrestlers, that kind of thing, all that can go a long way. But this show isn't about if you're a young wrestler, how to impress veterans. But nevertheless, we're just searching. We're trying to figure out what's going on. There's got to be a reason. If not, push him more. He is ripe at, you know, 32 years old and a veteran. And just – you know what? The only critique – and I'd want to rewatch the match before being too strong with this, but – I think the story of the match, and that commercial break in the middle and some of that, you know, was Swerve beating down Wayne and then grounding him with a chin lock during the break. But it did feel like they wanted to fit in their spots and show athletic Nick Wayne could be. And I get there's value to that, but like it's 2023. There's so many wrestlers who can do flashy moves. You know, Commander did it with Jericho in the opener. There's no shortage of that. So like, to me, I guess if I were to have any critique about the debut, instead of showing off, look at these big spots that both guys can pull off, I would have tried to tell a little bit more of a story in the match that didn't involve let's try to be as athletic and exciting as possible, but pull emotionally a little bit more. I'd like to see Nick Wayne's selling and Swerve, you know, maybe being cocky and overconfident and disrespectful towards this kid, and build to a hope spot and build to a comeback so that the crowd isn't cheering moves, but they're cheering Nick Wayne getting in some offense and making a comeback against Swerve, who got cocky and overplayed his hand in terms of thinking he had the match in hand. And so I guess to me that, like, and I'm thinking of 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon and that kind of thing. And I'm not saying Nick Wayne should have won in the end because of that. You don't want to recreate that. But there's something about telling a story instead of fitting in moves and showing off your athleticism that I think would serve him better at this stage of his career. And so that thought crossed my mind. And again, it's a small critique because it was exciting and a good showing for him. But I would opt the other direction, and instead of try to prove how athletic and exciting he is, I'd rather tell a little bit more of a story with him in the ring.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, especially where it's his first match. Like you kind of said, I understand what they were trying to get across to the idea that Nick Wayne was that athletic and could hang with someone like Swerve.
Yeah,
I think was what they were ultimately going for. You know, I was a fan of Swerve back during the WWE run and even before then when I was seeing him on indies here. But the thing that really solidified my opinion on him and feeling that he should be much higher on the card was the tag team run in AEW with Keith Lee and the Acclaimed. Because those matches were stealing shows, and you know, it's not exactly easy to steal an AEW show. I mean, everybody is working all out all the time, no pun intended. And yet, you know, they were stealing shows. And when you look at the makeup of those matches, I mean, we've talked a lot on this show about Keith Lee and where he's at in his career, and the Acclaimed, for as entertaining as they have become and as hot an act as they were at the time. I mean, they were brought in as enhancement guys. They weren't known for being standout flashy wrestlers. So right. When you boil that equation down, I mean, you really have Swerve Strickland as the guy making that whole scenario tick.
Yes. Good point. All right. Let's go to an email here. Azan in St. Louis is up first. We haven't talked about this yet. So it was a big segment of the show, the Adam Cole MJF stuff. What do you think about this idea of Adam Cole and MJF beating FTR and being champs while at the same time they start a feud between Punk and MJF instead of going to a feud between Cole and MJF? So, Azan, a specific scenario, you can respond to that. You can preface it with your thoughts on the buddy video week two with MJF and Cole. This is a divisive, polarizing storyline. I know on social media people are you know, expressing different strong opinions about this. Eric Kroll among them, texting me and posting on Twitter, ZW trying to drive me away with this stuff. What do you think, Brian?
I am very entertained while simultaneously thinking that it's probably bad for business.
I find myself with similar. Similar.
If I'm just watching it and I shut my brain off, I'm like, this is great. This is hilarious. I can't stop laughing at Max. And then at the same time, I'm like, man, this is completely counterproductive to what they're trying to accomplish. And I worry that it's going to backfire on them. I wasn't as big of a fan of the video tonight. I thought that Cole, not that he came off as unlikable, but he came off a little unnatural. The way that he, the way that he responded to MJF when MJF sort of suggested the idea that they could each take two of the women that walked by them. And he said that, you know, I really care about Britt. That seemed so unnatural to me. It's like, you know, it would have made sense if he was like, Max, I'm in a serious relationship. You know that. But for him to say, I really care about Britt, it was odd.
You know what I think it is? I think that's the natural thing that wrestlers say when they're in a relationship and they're one of the wrestlers who are not going to cheat on whoever they're with. Honestly,
yeah, I mean,
I think there's people like, yeah, I'm with her, but I mean, I don't really care about her. She pissed me off this week. You know, whatever their like rationalization is. And I just think that was a window into actually what's said. I think that you're at a bar, you're drinking, the single guy says, hey, you know, there's two girls. Why, you know, should we go approach them? And the other wrestler goes, no, you know, I really like who I'm with. I want to, you know, like, so I think it rang true, but it also, I don't know if it's the window into the business that they want to be, you know, broadcasting.
Yeah, it just sounded strange to me. Like, it sounded like it was rehearsed and scripted because it didn't sound like natural language. I mean, I get that it may very well be in that world. But then the, you know, the, like, when he was like, camera guy or whatever, I couldn't tell, like, was he trying to play up the idea that he was drunk? Because they had just finished taking shots.
Yeah. He seemed a little drunk, but I think it was I think it was acknowledging the camera, which last week bugged me because we had the four different camera angles, sometimes with the camera pointing one way at an angle where then they'd cut to the other angle and the cameras would have to be facing each other and visible, but they weren't, which means they did like four takes and splice them together. Yeah, I do not like that. It's not a sitcom. Stop it. And even sitcoms avoid that. It's just, you know, Impact has done that. NXT has been especially has been guilty of that. It's like more angles and you're not earning your money by doing all these cutaway in different angles. So anyway, I ranted about that last week a little bit. I think this is their way of going, yeah, we know a camera's here. We're acknowledging that this is not an invisible camera. And I kind of liked that because it's like, yeah, we got one, you know, got a handheld here and it's filming us.
Yeah, so all told, I wasn't a huge fan of the video. I didn't hate it. And you know, I got a chuckle at a couple of the things. Now, the entrance, on the other hand, and I know they've done it once already.
Yeah.
But MJF in particular, playing up the boom on the apron, that popped me. I mean, I laughed out loud at the fact that, you know, he's just there just shaking his body uncontrollably. And my girlfriend who was sitting next to me on the couch and reading.
Do you care about her? Sorry. Yeah. So, no, you don't need to. I'm not putting you on the spot here, but.
So she's sitting on the couch. She's sitting
I didn't
on
mean
the
to derail the show with that.
She's sitting on the couch next to me and she's reading because she'd never be caught watching AEW real. She looked up and saw Max gyrating and she's like, what is he doing? Cause she knows, like, she's very much familiar with the MJF character. And I've told her, you know, about how he is. She's seen clips, like videos of him out in public doing the shtick. And, you know, she thinks it's horrible, but entertaining at the same time. And she's like, is he a good guy now? And I was like, well, no, you have to. So if you're not a wrestling fan and you just suddenly stumble upon this, but you're familiar with the character, you're like, what in the world is happening?
And that is the issue here. Cause I'm trying to wrap my head around what's going on here. Is Cole gullible and everybody,
that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's the worst thing is if Cole's like, oh, he's not a bad guy. And you got Roderick Strong going, dude, yes, he is. You know, you got to know better. What is causing Cole to be naive enough to think with all of MJF's track record, everything he's done, that the fact that he enjoyed
and the fact that he tried twice to get out of this match.
Yes. And
three times, actually, because he did it on Twitter in the back before the match and then during the match.
I tried to leave. And so, I mean, I want this. What I don't want is entertainment, doing things that they find entertaining that can't be explained logically when we get to the end point. I think there's enough ways to entertain without having the pieces not fall into place in the end. And one of the pieces that has to fall into place is Cole doesn't seem like a complete dope for buying in to MJF's con.
And how do you do that?
Well, I don't know. Tonight was a step back from that because Cole's like telling Roderick on camera, oh no, I think he's a really good dude. Like at this stage, Cole can be going, hey, I know about MJF's past. I am not naive. But we did get teamed together and I don't know. I'd have to think it through. I mean, because the whole thing is convoluted. It's hard to make it work, but there should be a way where fans can go, okay, Cole's guard is up. At least he's not that naive.
The thing. So tonight when they were getting that huge reaction after the match and they were really playing it up and the crowd was chanting double clothesline and Max was feeding into it and everything, I'm thinking, okay, their assumption here is that the crowd is going to get so into them as a tag team that when Max inevitably turns on Cole, they think that they're just going to get away with the whole thing because the reaction to Max turning is going to be so negative that the fact that Cole looks like an idiot isn't going to matter. And I guess they're right, but I still disagree.
That's the thing. I mean, you can have a crowd pop in the end, and you're like, okay, it doesn't matter. But it doesn't mean you wouldn't be good to clean it up along the way anyway.
Right.
And so, is there a way that you can explain that, you know, MJF is a lot of things. He's not just one thing. And he was, you know, there was some genuineness. Because, you know, having that moment where they like, hey, I was going to turn on you. So was I. Ha, ha, ha. But we actually get along. So they're acknowledging that, you know, neither were trustworthy for the other one to begin with. But
you're also building unnecessary sympathy for MJF, too, because, like, they have that really genuine moment where Max is like, well, I've never really had any friends. And Cole actually feels bad for him.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Just because MJF eventually turns on Cole, that doesn't go away. They still did that. They still put it on TV.
Yeah, I want to run a poll at pwtorch.com asking readers what they think about this, you know, and not to make question too complicated, but you know the main thing is do you think in the end MJF is, because MJF works so hard to stop being cheered and to be booed, and it's been working, and he's putting that at risk, if not throwing it away, with the notion that the turn on Cole in the end will be so devastating to fans that they boo and they react. But it's not, it's going to be like, boo, we knew you were going to do it. We always knew it. And we're booing because now it's the end of the character that you were doing that we enjoyed and cheered for, more than, you know, the type of heel heat that I think ideally you want and that I think MJF could excel at. MJF just seems like he's not going to be content if he's not being super creative and pushing the envelope in some way. You know, I made the case, I think, with Jason earlier this week on the flagship, Way Keller podcast, I'd be fine with MJF just dialing it down in terms of the creativity and just being like that really good world champion, protected, nasty, unlikable, self-centered heel cutting more basic promos about whoever he's with. And that's, you know, it's easy to say in general as a philosophy that that's better than trying to be all sports entertainment-y and have, you know, like, you know, the stuff we saw with Kane and Daniel Bryan at the in WWE, or KO and Jericho with the friendship. And it's, you know, it seems like this is MJF is channeling a little bit of Chris Jericho's career. But so it's easier to say don't do all this stuff. But especially when MJF's super creative, he just wants to try different things and show his range. And also, you got to fill TV time. You know, I mean, there's a lot of TV time to fill. And we're not talking about, you know, a one-hour syndicated show back in the 80s where you'd cut your 45-second heel promo to get yourself over and you'd win a squash match every other week. And then you would wrestle the pay-per-view once a quarter or a house show once a month. It is a different world now. And I get that, you know, MJF wants to create a reason for him to get a lot of TV time and show that his segments draw well. He'll mention it on TV when they do well. Jericho's done the same thing. So I know it's more complicated from their perspective than us sitting here critiquing it. But I think they're putting at risk, you know, when MJF is, you know, Big Bill is not a serious main event act in AEW. That's not always presented, nor is Brian Cage. And when he's pretending his back is sore and he's got to run out of the ring, are we supposed to think, oh, he's faking it? Or are we supposed to think he can't really lift Big Bill off his feet and he's scared of him? And does that fit at all the persona pre-Adam Cole of MJF being this like person who was carrying himself as a like legit badass heel, not a chicken heel, but a guy who demands to be taken seriously and backs it up in the ring.
Just like Cole taking the phone call prior to the match when he says that or reading the text, sorry, when he reads the text from MJF that says, just saw Brian Cage backstage, I think I have the flu.
Right.
Like that's funny. Like, it's funny. But also, is that what you want your world champion saying about Brian Cage?
And yes, no, that point, and then what is the point. Like, if you're thinking about MJF being a conniving, devious...
Right.
Jerk, what is he getting at when he says, does he want Cole to go, well, I'll find a substitute partner, or let's withdraw from the match? Is it an escape hatch? Is he really going to not... Like, what is the point of saying that, other than it's funny?
My assumption was that he wanted Cole to wrestle the match alone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, heel MJF wants Cole to have to fight two big dudes alone.
But then Cole loses and the whole thing's over.
Right, exactly. Then, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have, there's also the issue where when this is over, and inevitably it will be, and they're going to return to the MJF and Adam Cole feud, when they do that, do you just go back to cutting super personal promos that are kind of, you know, half inside baseball, half not, like they were before? Are you now talking about your fake friendship? Like, is MJF making fun of Cole for falling for it? I just don't, where do you go? Where do you go out of like a fake partnership like this that feels main event world title worthy?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that should be the end goal. And is this on a path to get there? I don't know. We can revisit that later. I want to bring Scott from Long Island onto the show. Scott, good to hear from you. What are your thoughts on Dynamite tonight? Scott just dropped off. I don't know why. So, Scott, give us a call back and I'll look for you. So we'll go back to Azan's email. He has a second question. How do you grade the rap from Harley Cameron tonight? I mean, I know she's, you know, comes in with legit singing background. QT Marshall introduces it. She performs a rap video. I don't remember a lot about it, but I wasn't appalled by it, but I'm not quite sure what the point of it is. What do you think, Brian?
I am not immersed into the hip hop world nearly enough to make a comment on her talent or her level of talent in that regard. Other than to say that I just the QT Marshall stuff, I just don't think it belongs on TV, or if it's on TV, I don't think it belongs on Dynamite.
I'm glad they're doing more. If she's going to get TV time, to try to establish more about her, but I just don't get the point. Like, I mean, it'd be better if she was bad at what she's doing, because then there's heat there, but it's like, you know, like, what have they told us on Dynamite? Who she is, why she's there, what's the point? And why are we seeing a video of her just because she can? You know, I often say, you know, if Triple H or Stone Cold Steve Austin could juggle, doesn't mean that should be part of their wrestling act. If it doesn't serve a purpose to their character, don't juggle. And so why is she singing? What is the point? And I don't know at this point.
I think this stuff has been exclusively on Rampage to date, has it not?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And given the audience for that show or lack thereof, I think that it probably would have gone a long way to do a more proper introduction to her on their main brand if they really wanted to include this. And like, I don't want to harp on it like too badly because it didn't take up a ton of time. I just think that with AEW, when characters are not clicking in such an overwhelming and obvious way, I just think that the roster is too deep not to move on. And that's how I feel about QT Marshall and the guys that are associated with him. And I think he's brought down Powerhouse Hobbs considerably since he was teamed with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Being aligned with QT feels like it should be on Dark or the internet or Rampage, and you're not a serious talent. And I think that did hurt Hobbs. And there just wasn't a good explanation for why Hobbs associated with him at all in the first place. So yeah, that was weird.
He helped him one time. Remember?
Yeah, exactly. All right. JB from Detroit said, where the hell is this QTV, Harley Cameron, wrapping the claim thing going, if anywhere, and why is it getting any TV time, particularly on the flagship program? I mean, I think his question sort of answers it. I mean, her rapping is so she can now beat battle rap Max Caster, I assume.
Yeah.
And is that, I mean, I guess we wait and see, but again, why is she on TV? Why is she hanging out with QT? And if, how do we, like, why are they, why does Max Caster care if she can
right.
rap? I mean, like, I just, it's like, oh, Max Caster can rap. Oh, you can rap. And oh, you're eye candy for our viewers. And QT likes being on TV with you because who knows why. So, hey, we got it all figured out. It's like, no.
AEW is at their best when they're not doing bad WWE stuff. And this is something that I kind of throw in. I mean, they're supposed to be this antithesis to WWE, and for the most part, the majority of the stuff they do feels very much unlike WWE. But when they go low, so to speak, when they go to the more comedic sports entertainment-y type stuff, I think they're exceptionally bad at it.
Yeah. Yep. And that is the most common complaint about AEW. I'm trying to think if it meets that threshold of being the most common, but that I think it's a part that deflates and depresses people who want AEW to lean on other things, is how often AEW feels like a derivative wannabe blend of WWE and old WCW, instead of, you know, forging its own identity that, you know, those initial press releases seemed to be pointing towards. And I think it was, you know, a part of the vision of Cody Rhodes to have kind of that more of that approach. I don't know. But with Tony Khan's inclination is to, you know, have it be a variety show. Or he started off trying to be more of a wrestling show and he felt he hit a ceiling, and now he's trying to, you know, be a variety show. And if it's a good variety show, there's, you know, there can be a place for that, whether you can beat WWE at their own game or if you're better off counter programming them, you know, is a legit debate to have. You know, is your audience more narrow if you just focus on being a sports like presentation for something that the modern fans know isn't? Can you make that work? And are there enough people out there who will watch that? Or is the bigger audience just doing what is working very well for WWE, but being better in a few areas than WWE is, or trying to be, but still having, you know, checking those boxes where it catches the attention of more casual fans?
See, what's funny is I think that when AEW does do the sports entertainment stuff, the only time they're particularly good at it is when it involves MJF. Mm-hmm. And I was going to mention towards the tail end of our conversation about the MJF and Cole segment, a lot of what MJF does feels like an audition for WWE.
I know. It does. I mean, it crossed my mind. I think good advice is judge what people do, but don't guess what their motivations are. You know, like don't presume to get in people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
I'm admitting I had that same thought, and I have before with MJF, that some of what he does, pure speculation, is auditioning for a bigger stage and showing that he can do all these other things, that he isn't just this one thing that might work best for AEW.
And the funny thing is I don't even think he needs to do that. I think he's talented enough to just go to WWE if that's where he wants to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And frankly, I mean, if Tony Khan, obviously Tony Khan's not going to let this on there if he doesn't think it's good for his show.
Right.
And if Tony Khan's thinking, oh, this is bad for Dynamite and it's just MJF auditioning for WWE, he wouldn't let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But does it cross MJF's mind? I want to show how what range I have as a performer, because that can suit me as a free agent on the open market at some point. I mean, it's not far-fetched to imagine that thought hasn't gone through his head. Whether that is a motivating factor or he just is all in with AEW and just thinks this is the best thing for him because it's a good way to fill TV time and be entertaining and all that, I don't know. I don't know. But he's mega talented, and, you know, in isolation, I really enjoy these segments. But you summed it up well. But I watch him with reservations, but I also don't want to prejudge. You know, I want to see have they thought through some of the traps and pitfalls that I think await them if they haven't thought them through. And maybe they have, and it'll all make sense. And certainly, the Roderick Strong Roderick Strong's involvement in cutting to him watching on the monitor shows that they are going to tell the story of Cole should have known better. And he, and Roderick warned him that you know, MJF is not to be trusted. So it will be Cole kind of getting wrapped up in MJF's con, and Strong is there to try to be the voice of reason on the other shoulder, telling him, watch out for this guy. But it's still, you know, relatively early in the story. So we'll see where they take it. All right. Up next, JB says, I like how the announced team tied in Chris Jericho's history wrestling luchadors in WCW before his match with Commander. I feel like it gave the match more context and purpose, although Commander got in more offense than I'd care for. And then he adds, I'm curious, are Jose the assistant and Alex the official managers for every Latin wrestler on the roster? Maybe. I have to look. I thought the match was a bit messy. And I didn't fully grasp what the point was of it. You know, yes, he had a history wrestling some people 25 years ago on cable. Jericho did his like soft whip into the ropes, which has always been a bad habit of his. And then Commander like did the super flashy flip dive and just like was off, just completely missed Jericho. Jericho had to stick his hand out and pretend that knocked him over. There are a couple other things that just looked sloppy. I thought it was a lot of flash that didn't land. And I don't know why Jericho's taking that long to beat somebody like Commander, who hasn't been featured as any kind of a threat. So still not quite sure what the point of that was, but maybe there was one I missed. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I think it was just more furthering the idea that like Jericho may or may not be a babyface now. I mean, like the idea that he was kind of working a little bit faster paced match with the Commander and, you know, treating him more or less respectfully as an opponent. I that's the only real thing that I gleaned from it. I thought the match was fine for what it was. Thought the announcers did, you know, their due diligence in trying to get Commander over. And I did, again, this goes back to the what we talked about with the Nick Wayne video package and the Lance Archer package as well. They did give Commander highlights prior to the match, which I thought was good because he hasn't been on Dynamite in a while. And that's something that I've really, really stressed that I would like to see AEW do more of. And they were really good at it on this particular show. But yeah, he has certainly not been presented as a guy who has much steam. I mean, I think when his record came up at the bottom of the screen, he was 0-3 on Dynamite this year. So not exactly an impressive run and hasn't had a lot of matches to boot. So yeah, a win for Jericho, I don't think it means a whole lot. This was obviously more about setting up the promo afterwards with Callis.
So JB also says, I think Jake Hager actually cut a good backstage promo tonight with Jericho. It legitimately had moments that felt genuinely heartfelt, and it had me more intrigued over on whether Jericho decides between JAS, Don Callis, and family, or decides to bet on himself alone. Now, Brandon, what do you think of the segment with Jake Hager? That's the most they've leaned on him for mic work and a skit in a long time. He's just been had this really stupid hat thing that feels like an inside joke, amplified way beyond its worth. And you know, there is a history there, and Hager kind of gave him a guilt trip. Hey, this guy's a scumbag. I know you guys have a history. And I love the history. I love the footage of Callis with hair and, you know, them as a tag team way back and Bad News Allen and playing the Bad News Allen card. I thought that was, you know, one of the high points of the show because it added, you know, we sit here and go, why would Cole trust MJF? You know, he's having a good time going out drinking with this established evil scumbag. Jericho, you're like, why would Jericho associate with Callis if the idea is Jericho, we're supposed to have any sympathy for Jericho? Now Jericho's going from a heel to considering associating with a different heel who he has a background with. But the video gave us a reason to believe that he might have a reason because of all that history to associate with the sleaze bag that Don Callis portrays himself as. So it's believable he would consider it. And then they've added Hager to the mix in a more sympathetic way, going, you know, it's like the lesser of two evils. Hey, we're friends too. I dropped a lot to be with you. Why are you thinking of being with this guy? So that aspect of things I thought was well done, and I love the old footage. So what do you think about what JB had to say about it, and what are your thoughts on that ongoing tease of Jericho maybe joining the Callis family.
Yeah, I thought it was mostly solid overall. I mean, the Jake Hager backstage segment I thought did give a little bit more depth to the decision and more weight to the scenario as a whole. I think it was probably the first time in a long time that Hager's been presented with any real seriousness. And so while I did think that it was good and generally effective, I think that, you know, Hager has been diminished enough that the impact that it could have was probably limited. But I think it's a decent enough story to tell with Jericho at this stage of the game. I mean, Jericho has obviously been a backbone figure for AEW, but he's also had quite a few clunkers in terms of feuds and overall stories. I think that a lot of talent has gone into Jericho feuds with the expectation that they were going to wind up for the better coming out of it. And I think in most instances, that talent has come out about the same. It doesn't feel like even in defeat, Jericho has really put guys over to a real significant extent. And I'm not even necessarily blaming that on Jericho. I just think it's the way that his feuds have been presented, the way the character's been presented, the fact that despite being a heel most of the time, he still has the fans singing his theme song. I just don't think that it's been a great run the last year and a half or so. So I think this is an interesting spot for him where you can rely more heavily on telling a story that is centrally focused on Jericho and about where his allegiances lie, not so much about who is the up-and-comer of the month that's going to get their win over Jericho.
All right, very good. We'll get back to JB. He's got a couple other points, including some different takes on things we've already spoken about. But we'll go to David Bryant in Ashland, North Carolina. He is the collision hits and misses contributor to PWTorch.com, who has called up, I assume safely, with some thoughts on Dynamite tonight. David, good to talk to you.
Hi, guys. It's good to talk to you. How you doing?
Good.
How you? Awesome. So I want to ask, what do you guys think of the Ruby Soho Sky Blue match?
Brandon, what'd you think?
I think it was bad. I mean, it was a little clunky at times. But more so than the quality of the match itself, I was more just kind of pleased that there's been a pretty significant focus on both of these women as of late. I mean, Sky Blue came up and onto the roster as little more than enhancement talent, and they've gotten behind her in a fairly significant way to a point that she's become sort of an integral part of the division, and I think that's a good thing. I mean, even if she isn't, you know, necessarily fully up to par yet in the ring, I just think that they really need women that they can rely on, that they can put on TV on a weekly basis. So I think that was a net positive overall. And same for Ruby Soho. I mean, I have been very critical of the outcasts, and I still am critical. I think that the interference is just over the top. They did it again tonight, although thankfully they were removed from ringside. But Soho's a good strong promo. I think that generally speaking, she's one of the more reliable workers that they have in that division. So yeah, I mean, a mild thumbs up in terms of the action in the ring, but generally speaking, I think that it was a net positive for the division as a whole.
I thought Ruby did a good job selling that she had a nose injury and then,
yes,
you know, the ref checking with her. And then, you know, it was very heelish to be like, haha, you know, I've got this pre-existing injury and I played it up a little bit. I like that better than like, you know, like more serious injuries that, you know, with like Buddy Matthews and Andrade a few weeks back. I thought that was playing on the fans going, oh no, this guy just got back from injury and now he blew his knee out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that had as much of a point. But this totally worked for her character. I thought the match was fine. It didn't jump out to me as anything too special, but it also seemed fine. And sometimes these women's matches don't. You're always kind of bracing for something that doesn't go well, but it seemed good. David, you brought that up for a reason. What did you think of it?
Well, I was much higher on the match than I guess you guys were, because I was excited to hear what you thought, because I thought it went really well.
Yeah.
I used to write the Dark Elevation reports, and I just remember when Sky Blue was like really bad. I mean, I don't mean to insult her or anything like that, but a lot of things she did were bad, like punches. But she's gotten so much better. It feels like I'm watching a wholly different person in a matter of just a few years. And I just was really impressed with that throughout that. Maybe I'm judging it on that curve because of that. But when I saw it, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
She's no longer wearing those jeans and the cutoff, shirt with the back ripped hat. She just looks like a pro wrestler again. She's in the ring. She's giving us great facial expressions. She's giving us peril when she needs to give us peril. Not everything went perfect. I know they were going for the leg hold, and that looks like it kind of got clunky there. But given where she started, it feels like she's in such a great place. And I'm a mark for Ruby Soho, so I really liked her. So I thought it was a really good match, an example to me of why it would be okay to push the women a little bit more in AEW, which I know I harp on a lot. But that was my take on it. But I see what you guys are saying.
And I'll add to it. For one, I think that it makes sense that you've seen her come a long way.
Yeah.
And that jumps out to you. Because I think when you see Ruby Soho, who's not established that she is a top-level world-class worker, she's got some shortcomings. But she has value. And she's good. She's solid. She's fine. But she's not like the person you go, all right, let's give her 25 minutes or even 15 minutes in a showcase pay-per-view match one-on-one. And this guy, Blue, yeah. I mean, I remember some of what you're talking about, David, in some of the dark matches I saw, and early on just thinking, oh, man, there's a ways to go here. The fact that the match, I thought, was fine, it didn't, it was a 9-minute match with a commercial break in the middle and a distraction spot, and a pause for a ref to kick people out of ringside. It wasn't a showcase match with a ton of flow, but it didn't jump out to me like, why of all people who deserve TV time is Sky Blue getting TV time? Like, I'm with you in going in saying that I think she put in a performance that justified getting a rare what is it? There's not a ton of women get matches on Dynamite, and certainly not frequently, because there's that kind of one match per week usually. And I thought she put in a good enough showing where you go, all right, I'd put her on the depth chart and give her a program and find a reason for her to be on again.
Yeah, I think that the thing with Sky Blue recently has been she's been getting solid reactions from the crowd, and she's been appearing regularly enough that she feels, Wade, kind of like you said, like she's on the depth chart. And honestly, like the booking in the women's division is so inconsistent that the bar has been set pretty low. Like I am willing to get behind someone who's just featured consistently. So if that's Sky Blue, great. Like whoever they want to put in that role, who they're going to actually feature consistently, who doesn't necessarily need to be the champion, I think is great for the division, because it's a lot of, this is whoever we're presenting as the champion right now, which happens to be the Tony Storm and the Outcast. So the Outcasts are always featured to a certain extent, and then you have the champion if it's not an Outcast, and then you occasionally have Britt Baker, and then everyone else just seems to come and go. And so the fact that there's consistency here and we're seeing Sky Blue on almost a weekly basis, I think is a really, really good thing. Same goes for Willow, who has been appearing consistently as well. I think she's great.
All right, David,
yeah.
Back to you.
You mentioned Willow. So who do you think should win the tournament out of the people that are left? We've got Athena and Willow are going to face off, and then the winner of that will face off Ruby Soho. Like, who do you guys think would be the best to win the tournament to help to elevate the women's division in AEW, which, as a one of the only, I guess, big fans of professional wrestling, I don't know, but women's professional wrestling, and I would like to see that division elevated. Who would you have win the tournament?
My short answer is Willow. Brandon, how about you?
Willow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're on to something with
her,
and I think she will benefit from winning and being elevated. I don't think Ruby needs it, because she's not the alpha in her group, and that would just be giving her a trophy that doesn't really change her role underneath Saraya and Tony Storm. And I would choose Willow over Athena pretty definitively also at this point.
I feel like we're on, okay, I feel like we're on the same page. Okay, on that one, then I don't have a whole lot of – like, I like Ruby Soho. I would not be upset if Ruby Soho, like, won it. I feel like Athena just does not need it. She's having a really great reign in Ring of Honor. She had a blowout, like, 19-minute street fight for the title a while back, and she's great with that character. So it feels like she doesn't necessarily need it. But Willow – you're right. Willow Nightingale feels like she's on the cusp of something. Like, just standing on a precipice and just needs that kind of push. And I think that would be...
I agree. So,
that's kind of what I was thinking. I wonder, you mentioned Harley Quinn, and you were talking about the rap skills. And I think Harley Quinn has a place on the roster. And I think it's with QT Marshall, which, if anyone's read my stuff, is surprising given how I sometimes gently make fun of QT Marshall. But he, I think he would make a good manager. I think he dressed kind of like Teddy Long, you know, back in the day, and tried and pushed her as this music act. She can rap. But I actually thought she rapped too well. When I was watching her, I was like, oh wow, because, you know, I like Doja Cat, I like Nicki Minaj. I was like, this is reminding me of Doja Cat and her album Planet Her, which was nominated for Album of the Year. And she's got some of what Nicki Minaj has with the speed rapping. And I'm like, if you're a bad guy, even if you're talented at something, because she is clearly talented at that, don't do it to your best of your ability. Like do it badly. Like, if you're a great singer but you're a bad guy, sing badly. Because I don't want to see you as a bad guy and be like, yeah, but you're really good at that other thing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I have like one critique is that she did it. She should have done it worse, and then they should have had. But now that we know that she can do it well, that's a hard genie to put back in the bottle. You know, they can't. So we've seen it. So I think instead they should run with it. Have QT Marshall be like, you know, she is the best. She is so wonderful. She's amazing. Just pipe her up to the point. It's so annoying to us. And then have somebody come out like Jamie Hayter and go, you are right. You know, you are the best rapper in the women's division of AEW, but I'm the best wrestler. And then just take her down and beat the crap out of her.
What is the backstory of what she's doing there and why she's with QT? Do you think that they've established that enough, or is it just, Max Caster raps and no, she can rap, so let's just wedge them into a program?
The backstory is not well established. And they should have. What they should have done is they should have taken some footage and filmed her when she performed at MGM in Vegas the week of, and they did the week of Double or Nothing, and then started with that, something like that. You know, she started with something there, and maybe it's QT Marshall kind of sees her, discovers her in that area. He's an opportunist. He sees the opportunity there, but, you know, this, what he can possibly do with her, a way to make money, and they tell the story. You are correct. They have not told that story. And part of that is why we need more time for the women in AEW and time, you know, for some of these mid-card acts in AEW to have a compelling story that isn't the top story but makes sense to the audience at home. So I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, absolutely. David, anything else on your mind about that show?
The last thing is I have probably an unpopular opinion, that most of my opinions are, but I think that Adam Cole, you know, we're talking about the – you're right. Your analysis is dead on that both of them kind of look like idiots right now. But I think that a fun outcome would be, and an outcome that might actually help to – we kickstart Adam Cole's career. You know, he's come up short so many times when fighting for the AEW championship. And instead, have him, from this time he's spending with MJF, become more corrupted in thinking, you know, I would rather be a scumbag who actually wins than a nice guy who almost wins. And I think that would be a better thing for his character. He plays a really well, good heel. But Baker is a much better heel, and she could even join him in that. I would actually swerve them that way, and it would put off the ultimate MJF versus Adam Cole match for quite a while as we see them teaming, helping each other out, the singles divisions, basically both being scumbags, and we get an extra heel to the roster. What do you guys think?
Brandon, are we not seeing what's going on here, which is maybe they're trying to work towards a Cole heel turn. Maybe Cole, they see Cole versus Punk as a match they want to go to. What do you think about David Sinero?
My issue with that is just that they just finished, you know, solidifying Adam Cole as a babyface, and I think that fans naturally like him so much that he's just better suited to play that role right now. And I do agree, he does play the heel role very well, but fans also still cheer him as a heel because they know what he's really like, and they just really like him. I've been waiting for a while to see babyface Adam Cole in AEW, and I would like to see them give it a lot more of a chance than they have to date. I just don't want them to get into the quick turns of Cole the way that NXT did near the end there. I think that you're right about the idea that it would sort of solve the conundrum that we were talking about earlier, but it also would present a new one, which is that if Cole goes to the dark side, so to speak, he's going to be playing subservient to MJF in a way. If they're tag teaming or if he's just off doing his own thing while MJF is defending the title, and Cole has made it very clear that his want and his goal is to be AEW World Champion. So ultimately, being a bad guy doesn't necessarily serve his purpose very well, because if he's chummy with MJF and he's a heel, he's not going to get that title shot.
David, what do you think about that? Rebuttal, yeah.
That's sort of sound logic. It is. I think that sounds logic. I think that he could go for other things in the meantime. He could try to focus on getting the tag team championships. But I think what you make is a good point, because I guess my problem is I don't know that AEW sees Adam Cole as a future champion. Maybe they do. And if they do, then I think you're right. That's probably not the best direction. If they see him as a future top star who can enhance other top stars, then I think it could be behooved by turning heel. But I actually – you do make a very good point on that. Another point I would make about Nick Lane. I don't know a whole lot about him other than what we've read on Vine, so I don't know how good he'll ultimately end up being on the mic, et cetera. I know that he's young, but I am not – I just don't think we should necessarily discount the idea of giving titles to younger wrestlers. When you look at some of history, you know, Rey Mysterio got his Cruiserweight title when he was 21. Jeff Hardy was 23 when he got the Intercontinental Championship. Tyler Bates, 19, when he got his first title. But it's not that far off from 18. So I don't feel like we know enough to know if he's that good. But I feel like if he's that good, I don't want them to do what they did to Hook. Because they were chanting Nick Lane's name tonight. And again, we have one data point in the whole chart. But I'm still almost a little traumatized by the fact that they had Hook as lightning in the bottle. People were hijacking other matches to chant for Hook. And they said, well, mm-hmm. you need to just wait for him to be more seasoned, and you can't ever put that back in. If Nick Lane were to catch fire, I would hate for them to not just run with him, you know, like it's a sprint and not a marathon. In order to get something out of him, that if that's the case, based on having seen other people that, you know, as young as like 19, like I mentioned, and people that are like, you know, 21, sort of hold championships and still be able to do a decent job, not the world title, but, you know, able to do decent jobs with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule about not having someone who's 18 years old if he shows maturity and the skill set and checks all the boxes that promoters look for and veteran wrestlers would endorse. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule not to do it, but there is a little bit of then what? You know, I mean, like to me, a 3-year journey till he's 21 before he wins his first title might make that first title win mean more than if in a meta way fans are going, oh man, they're sure pushing this kid fast. And there might be some resentment over, did he earn it? What about these other 6 wrestlers? I've been waiting to get their chance, and he's getting a lot of attention. It could actually backfire if he came across as if he was just getting to jump ahead in line, even if he's good and likable. And frankly, AEW has too many titles. So, like, let's pretend there's one men's world title and one TV title or secondary title. If that were the case, I don't know that Nick Wayne should be anywhere near either of those with how deep the AEW roster is, and they've got two A shows and then Rampage is a B show. To me, there's other ways to make Nick Wayne valuable than thinking title run, especially because there's so many titles, they don't even mean that much. But so I think you end up with potentially more negative than positive coming from it. So I'd say push him, put him in a tag team, have him have some feuds with some you know, veterans who think they can just, you know, stop this kid in his tracks and crush the fans, his fan base, and just tell some good basic personal stories that way. Brandon, what do you think?
For me, I think it's just entirely dependent on how the crowd reacts to him. I think that you kind of play it by ear and see how things go on a week-to-week basis. Wade, you pointed out that the fact that AEW has way too many titles, and that's certainly the case. And so the flip side to that is that putting one of the undercard titles on him, while it doesn't necessarily mean much, it also doesn't hurt very much. So I don't want to, you know, jump to throwing a title his way next week or next month. But if he's getting really, really strong reactions, I don't want to, just because of his age, say that precludes him from something like a TNT title run. Because we've seen, I mean, that title could certainly use the revitalization of someone who's hot and who's over and goes on a hot streak. I mean, the only downside to something like that is I think that you would present a Nick Wayne title run like that very much in the same way that you're presenting Orange Cassidy's international run. So you'd have to space those out somehow.
David, back to you. Any follow-up or closing words or another topic?
Well, that's about it. I guess I do want to say, you know, you guys have, in my opinion, maybe I'm biased because I write sometimes with a torch, but in my opinion, I think this is the best post show out there. It's one of the, you know, I have very strong opinions, and this is one of the only shows that's able to change my mind when I listen to it. And so you guys always make all the great points, and I thank you for having me on there. And I highly recommend people that are considering going VIP, go VIP for shows like The Fix and shows like Everything. We're a Twitch fan. So thank you for having me.
David, thank you so much. Everybody listening, check out David's Collision Hits and Misses column at pwtorch.com. He has strong opinions, and he's a good writer, and he's funny. His dark reports in the archives are also worth seeking out. So it's great that he took time to call and threw a couple different perspectives at us and ideas that we're able to bounce off each other a little bit here. Okay, if you are still live streaming the show, you're welcome to push one on your keypad if you want to join the conversation, or call us if you haven't yet. 347-215-8558 when you call push one. And meanwhile, we do have more of JB's email to get to. We talked about, I got to keep track of this because I'm taking these out of order in the way that he presented them. We're talking about MJF and Cole, so let's go to this. JB says, I disagree with Todd Martin a bit from last week's Fix VIP podcast. And I think last week it was the flagship simulcast too, so everybody can hear it. I think that if MJF and Cole play it right with this friendship angle, they can actually come out of it having intensified their rivalry. I think that MJF is skilled enough to actually be convincing enough to both the audience and Cole that he sincerely wants to be Cole's friend, and that he's just a misunderstood guy, as he did at times with both Cody Rhodes and CM Punk, that when he finally pulls the rug out from under Cole, it will truly create a blood feud, and it is a great gateway to their inevitable next title match, whether that be at All In or All Out. I mean, that is the most likely path in what I think they're most likely hoping to get out of this, right, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with the premise at all. My concern is just how do you do that and not make Cole look like a dummy?
Right. Yeah, because Cole is, it's not like Cole's playing up MJF, but Cole's like looking at the camera like we're, you know, oh, geez, this guy is a little too much. I mean, he still doesn't want him to touch his shirt, but I don't think that's enough to say I don't trust you. It just means you have a thing
right.
of people touching you. So, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just Cole's got to show somewhere without it being obvious that MJF would hear about it. You know, it's on national TV. Cole's going, I don't trust this guy. I'm just faking it. He can't say that to the camera because MJF would, you know, hear that because the show's broadcast nationally and people acknowledge that they know what happens on TV. So, you know, How do they protect Cole from looking like a sucker, or give Cole the out that makes sense in retrospect, that this was all a ruse and he never trusted MJF, as opposed to the excitement over being tag champs, which seems like genuinely what Cole wants right now. He wants to be tag team champions with MJF. And it's like, I know fans are cheering and popping for MJF's entertainment value, but if MJF turns on him, Brandon, it's hard to recover from that if all the fans are on Roderick Strong's side, even if they're entertained in the meantime, and you seem like you just were, you know, too dim-witted to pick up on the obvious.
Yeah, and they can't – I'm just thinking, like, you know, obviously MJF is going to – if they get this tag team angle really over and it's well on its way, when MJF eventually does turn, I suspect that there's going to be – you know, a massive negative reaction to MJF. But at the same time, I mean, like, isn't everybody also kind of expecting it?
Mm-hmm.
So will they? Or will they just pop because, like, oh, this is cool. Like, we knew this was coming, but this is what we wanted to see. And then, again, it comes back to where do you go after that? I mean, how does it become a blood feud? Do you go back to the Britt Baker well? Like,
yeah.
That didn't work particularly well when Jericho did it. So
I don't know. But if it does good numbers in the meantime, they'll have that as a breaking point, right, Brandon?
I mean, like I said to start this, I'm enjoying watching it.
Yes, I know.
If that was the only, I guess at the end of the day, if you want to make the case, I mean, the cynical side of this is you can say, well, if you're enjoying it, what does it really matter? But obviously, there's more to it from an analyst perspective.
Yes. So I know that much of next week will be taken up by Blood and Guts, but 2.5 weeks seems like a decently long time to wait until the Blind Tag Eliminator Finals. What will MJF and Colt do between now and then? JB asks that. Do we just get more Night on the Town, more friendship skits? Is that what we're in for?
Yeah, I mean, probably. You figure that next week they probably win. I mean, it doesn't really make a ton of sense if with how much time they've given to this angle. I would imagine they win the tournament and challenge for the tag team title. So in the meantime, I'm assuming that they'll have to do some more segments like that, which can work. I'm just kind of thinking too, like they've been very intentional about the featuring of Roderick Strong here. And I wonder if there's a way to work him into this that causes them to fall apart in a different way. So in other words, like what if Roddy tries to get involved or Roddy makes a comment, MJF hears it, MJF attacks the already injured Roderick Strong, that sends Adam Cole over the edge and Adam turns on MJF.
Mm-hmm.
Is the attack on an injured Roderick Strong enough to keep MJF the heel in that scenario, or do the fans boo Adam Cole because he just broke up a team that they really like?
Or you mean Roderick? Do they boo Roderick?
No, do they boo Adam Cole for breaking up the team with MJF? In other words,
I see what you're saying now. Yeah, no, and then the question in my mind is Roderick Strong enough of a established persona in the AEW universe to be the key factor in what happens between big free agent signing Adam Cole, former NXT champ, and MJF, your centerpiece world champion star right now.
Yeah.
Do you want Roderick Strong to be the kind of the key person who perhaps changes the course of where this goes? And can you trust what the reaction of fans will be for his involvement too? If fans are enjoying MJF and Cole and Roderick is the party pooper who spoils the fun, that, you know, they got to be careful too, because they could get a reaction they're not looking for if ultimately fans like MJF and they like Cole and MJF together and Strong, well, in the real world, is the clear-headed guy saying the truth. Fans react to him meddling and trying to break up, quote, an entertaining pairing.
And does that transfer the heat from Strong to Cole for standing up to Strong? For Strong. Yeah. That's the issue. It solves the problem of MJF turning on Cole, which everybody sees coming, but it introduces a whole other problem. So,
I know. Yes. All right. He also says, I know that it's obviously still extremely early, and it was a right call in having Swerve go over tonight, but I think there's a lot of potential in Nick Wayne. I thought he certainly came across as earnest and articulate in his video package, and he was clearly competent and exciting in the ring. But what impressed me most was the emotion and reactions that he showed between moves, which I really thought got the crowd into the match. He has so much time to get there, but I think it's possible that he has star potential with my evaluation of this much too small sample size. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, when I talked earlier about, let's fit in spots, it still was more than that. You know, I mean, it's not like Swerve wasn't the heel and Nick Wayne wasn't doing some of the things that JB points out in between the moves and that kind of thing. I think Nick was more than just let me fit in my spot. So, but I still don't think they leaned enough into the story of this kid. Is he in over his head? As opposed to let him prove how he can pull off these moves and not get hurt. It's just such a small sample size. I don't really want to draw any big conclusions, but I agree that I think it seems like everybody agrees. He was good in the video. We all have our superlatives for it. JB says earnest and articulate. Let's just see more. I mean, people are, I think he put in a showing in the video and in the ring where people go, all right, I get that why there's a buzz about him and I want to see what he does next. And that's a really good point to be after your first show. He also says, I feel like Swerve is perennially involved in too much. He's seemingly involved with Keith Lee, as it feels like he has been since I can remember, mm-hmm. and with Darby and OC. He's part of the Mogul Embassy, but there are so many people of little significance in that faction, I often forget who's in it. They really need to simplify things with him. Pick one direction and let him sink or swim. Well, JB, you're on the same page as us. I mean, like, get him out of faction and let him sink or swim as a single star. If he's got a buddy or two with him, that kind of completes the act. A little bit of kind of the hit row scenario, that's fine. But Mogul Embassy is not good, and let's get past this Keith Lee thing and get him involved with some of the top people and see where it takes us. Anything you want to add to that, Brandon?
No, I think what I said earlier, I he'd be a great addition for Collision.
Yeah, yep. I'm trying to think, is there anything that we haven't covered via emails, phone calls, our own conversation on the show tonight?
We hit the women's match. We hit the two. Well, we didn't really cover the first tag, but I mean it was generally, you know, Sammy and Garcia go over Darby and Orange Cassidy. I think we pretty much hit everything else.
So I guess, I mean, that is worth expanding on just a little bit. Sammy and Danny. Jericho's off contemplating a new future that doesn't involve the Jericho Appreciation Society. Mm-hmm. They're out there teaming. Guevara's baby-facing it, you know, helping the guy up. Garcia's standing at ringside going, okay, that's fine. You know, not a real strong opinion. He's not joining in, but he's not just, like, shoving him going, why are you being a good guy? So it's at least they're putting them out there and acknowledging it to some degree. Did the announcers lean at it enough to go, wait a second, where does this leave the rest of Jericho Appreciation Society? And, you know, Garcia was tempted to go on his own and then he went back to JAS. Sammy Guevara is in a similar position that Garcia was at one point. Like, should they be talking more about their shared history and what this means for them? Or is it better to kind of have that be an undercurrent and lay low? It's sort of there, but they won't play that until they're ready.
I think I'd prefer that it were a little bit more clearly defined. I mean, that's generally been a complaint of mine with factions in AEW, is that their borders are loose and there isn't much definition there. And I think that has become the case with JAS, whereas previously it was one of the stronger, more well-told or well-storied factions that the company had. They've all been kind of off doing their own things in recent months. I mean, Parker and Menard have kind of disappeared for the most part, save an appearance here or there, and they are going to be on Rampage this week. I would have preferred to hear a little bit more about it on commentary. I mean, by the time Jericho gave that speech last week saying that it might be time for them to go their separate ways, I was kind of thinking they already had gone their separate ways because Sammy was a babyface, Jericho was involved with Adam Cole, and the rest of the crew wasn't really getting involved there. So it felt a little sloppy, and tonight was sort of a continuation of that. I mean, Garcia appears to kind of be doing his own thing. I mean, he's more involved on the Ring of Honor side, and then Sammy Guevara has been a babyface, but still teaming with heels, still teaming with Jericho on occasion. The line has not been clearly drawn for him, and I think it's showing in crowd reactions. I mean, he's not getting strong reactions, period. I mean, Guevara used to elicit major boos in virtually every city that they went to, both when he was a babyface and when he was then properly cast as a heel. But since they've sort of meddled with this Jericho Appreciation Society, just seems like he's lost a ton of steam in general.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. All right. Brendan, great show. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. It was a lot of fun to cover AEW. And I thought overall, despite being, you know, a show that really was used, at least that main event segment was really used to build next week. I thought they did a good job of putting together some stuff to make this noteworthy enough. But I will say overall, I think that, I'm glad from a television perspective to see them being near the end of this Canadian run. I'm like nothing against Canada. It's a lovely place, and I would like to visit more than I have. But it's been unimpressive crowds, dimly lit arenas, and it has made the company feel lesser than I think it is.
I agree, and you stole my final topic that I was going to throw at you, which is pretty much what you said. You know, love Canada, but this has not been and the fans who showed up have been vocal and not disruptive. You know, they weren't trying to make it about them. It'll be good to just be in bigger buildings or buildings with more packed fans where, you know, you always know at the beginning of a show what it's going to be like in terms of the atmosphere, because do they go to a wide shot or do they show a cluster of 40 fans or 20 fans up close, or just, you know, screaming fans at ringside up close.
And can you barely see beyond the first like three rows of the lower bowl?
Exactly. Yep.
It doesn't help too when it's contrasted to WWE, who has not had to light their crowds lately because every arena is full.
Oh, they're just doing such good business right now. They are bringing new fans into the fold who haven't been watching before, who are buying tickets. This isn't just lapsed fans coming back. I mean, there's you know, I believe metrics that are indicating that they're just creating new fans with a lot of the stuff that they're doing. And it I think it's, you know, yeah, there's just a lot of things going well. That's a whole other topic, but I think a lot of people who might be going to AEW shows, I don't know how many of them are instead going to WWE shows, or if you just have frustrated WWE fans who thought AEW was a savior and now AEW isn't the savior they wanted it to be and they're done, but AEW's not growing, and then WWE just is growing. And I think that's probably more what's happening than a bunch of people who used to watch WWE but booed John Cena and booed Roman Reigns went to AEW, and now they're just going with AEW and now they're going back to WWE. The demographics suggest there are just new fans showing up, age and gender.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case. And I'll note too before we sign off here, in regard to AEW's official return to the States next week, I have been pleasantly surprised by the way tickets have moved for TD Garden next week. I mean, I've been watching that show very closely because once the Blood and Guts announcement came, I decided, you know, that I would probably try to make the trip down, but I was watching closely just to see when they would drop tickets and when they would modify the seating chart to accommodate the two rings. And first of all, once Blood and Guts was announced, they moved over 1,000 tickets in 24 hours. So that was a huge selling point and a huge draw for them. When they initially announced this debut at TD Garden, I was a little curious only because they had been running the Aganis Arena across town, which is not even half the size of TD Garden. Now, when I attended a show at the Aganis, it was a full legit sellout, and they were hot at the time. It was April of 2022. So since then, they visited a couple more times, and they were not able to sell out that building. So that building has a capacity of about 5,500, and they were not filling it even in Boston, despite only going there a couple times a year. So when the TD Garden show went on sale, sales were not moving particularly quickly at all. And in fact, it wasn't until the Blood and Guts announcement came that they opened up the second half of the bowl, rounding around to the hard cam.
Mm-hmm.
So they had completely cut the arena into basically thirds, and they were only selling the TV third of the lower bowl up until the Blood and Guts announcement. Now, since the Blood and Guts announcement, they opened up the entire lower bowl around the other side, around the hard cam, sold that out completely, and then on top of that, opened up the balcony on the TV side, which has been moving decently well. So they've moved a lot of tickets in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, WrestleTix has them at over 7,000 tickets distributed as of yesterday.
Yep.
And that was up 1,200 since their prior update. They're currently set up for 8268. It's a big arena, but the stage cuts off a lot of it. The hard cam, cuts off a lot of it. So, I don't know how much they'll move after the announcement tonight. I don't know if Pac and Ibushi sell more tickets or if people kind of who are going to go already are, they already had enough to make them know this is a special show and they're going to go. But I'm curious what that final count is, and do they get to 8, 9, 10,000 or just kind of hover in the mid sevens.
And how interested they are at, so I assume it's going to be a local audience. Like for me, for example, I'm not going to travel 3 hours to sit in the balcony. I just, I'm just not going to do it. I might have when I was younger. But for people in town, are they willing to go sit in the balcony for a couple hours? Because that's all that's left. They've sold through everything down on the floor and in the lower bowl now. So the balcony on the TV side is all that's left.
WrestleTix also about tonight's show. 9 hours ago, they said they were up to just over 3,200 tickets distributed. Do you know Saskel Center's capacity?
I do not know.
Yeah, I don't know right off. I looked it up last week, but I don't recall. They ended up with over 3,000 people in the building. So, they at least were able to focus on a section of fans and not have it be there. Tony had texted me last week because we had reported WrestleTix's numbers, and he said that the numbers were a little bit higher than WrestleTix had, and that they sold over 2,100 tickets for Collision last Saturday and had about 700 comps. So they were close to 3,000 in the building, and I think WrestleTix had them just barely over 2,000. So, the numbers, there's some wiggle room in the numbers we're reporting, but the gist of it is pretty clear. They didn't pack that place tonight for Dynamite. They haven't been packing it on the Canadian tour, but they're looking at a crowd of for sure 7,000 plus and maybe 8 or 9 by the time next Wednesday comes around.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, to see sort of the growth there in the Boston market and the Northeast market. They haven't been anywhere north of Boston yet, and given the size arenas that they're drawing, I think that they would do particularly well here in Maine. I mean, we have done extremely well with WWE house shows when they were coming here on a regular basis in the last few years prior to the pandemic, and we've got a couple of arenas that make a lot of sense for AEW. New Hampshire has one as well. So it'd be interesting to see them make their way a little bit further up north the way that they have some of the other mainstays. But yeah, I think it should be a good crowd next week, and it's most fascinating to see them enter a WWE stranglehold. I mean, people think of Madison Square Garden as being synonymous with WWE, but WWE has had an exclusivity contract with TD Garden in the past as well. So it has long since expired. I think probably because WWE didn't feel like there was anyone else who really could run that building or would run that building. That was very much a WWE building for a long time. And of course, it's still the one that they go to. In fact, they just hosted Survivor Series War Games. So
All right. Very good. Brandon, thanks so much. Always great talking wrestling with you.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you Friday night after SmackDown.